I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and I'm joined today by one of London's most exciting chefs, Ben Murphy. Still in his 20s, Ben has burst onto the scene with multiple accolades, including Breakthrough Chef of the Year and Chef to Watch by the Good Food Guide. His journey from catering college has included working in some of the best restaurants in the world, including the 3-star Le Pré de Genie and Epicure in France, and Per Se and 11 Madison Park in New York. With Pierre Kaufman as his mentor, Ben is now on his path to culinary greatness as head chef at Launceston Place in London. Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you. So you've gone from incredibly busy days in the kitchen to lockdown. What have you been up to?
So to be fair, I've been taking advantage of the time off. So priority being catch up on sleep, watching a bit of Netflix, and yeah, I think just having a bit of me time, to be fair. It's quite rare that we've ever come across a situation, and from working nearly 6 days a week to waking up and not knowing what's going on next, it's a bit of a blur. But I mean, I'm enjoying it.
Have you been creating any new menus or trialing out new recipes for the restaurant?
So not necessarily trying out new recipes, but yeah, I've designed a new menu, which I will then try out when I go back to hopefully cooking at Launceston Place and stuff, and put into place like flavor combinations that I've been working on, which I think work well just from doing research and having a lot of that downtime where I can actually reflect and really focus on putting a menu together. Whereas when I was at the restaurant, everything was very ongoing, so it would be like an ongoing process of getting ingredients in, testing it as we work while running the restaurant. So it'll be a bit full on, but obviously now I have that free time, I can actually sit down, focus, write down notes, draw like dishes together. Because it's something I enjoy as well, and it relaxes me. And then, yeah, hopefully when we come back from this situation where we're in, we'll be stronger than it was when we first stopped.
Yeah, brilliant. And are you in touch with your team? How are they coping?
Yeah, so I FaceTime and speak to the team every other day. We're constantly on like WhatsApp or like Instagram, Facebook, and we're speaking. And yeah, they're doing good. They keep insane as well. I just give them a lot of reassurance, and I constantly tell them and make sure they understand everything that we've achieved so far, just so that they feel comfortable as well and they're happy. I know a lot of my guys haven't really got family in London, especially. So they're the people, like a couple of them are certain ones I need to like focus on even more, just to make sure that like, they keep insane and stuff and healthy, especially.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, before you came, you became a chef, you were about to embark on a football career. What happened?
Yeah. So football was something I really focused on a lot. It ran through the family. Like my mum and dad are huge Arsenal fans. My brother, like, yeah, literally everyone. And football was something I really enjoyed, like kicking a ball at like age 6 to then turning 16. And I actually broke my collarbone as I was having trials at QPR. And that kind of took me out for 6 months. And then that was the age gap of me not being able to pursue something in that sort of career. So the whole cooking thing is a bit random, to be fair. Like my mum works in Waitrose. My dad's a plumber. It's not like I have any sort of family that runs through where, yeah, they were a professional chef back in the day. Like it's not like that at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something I got into at school. And it was probably the only subject I really turned up to at the time.
Right.
And just like, as well as maths and English, but like RE and geography was ones I never really went to. But the food technology is an exciting thing for me. It's something that I found was very arty. And it kept me like off the street. It made me engage on something new that I didn't think I'd actually enjoy, but something I really did. I got lucky enough to get into Westminster Kingsway College, leave at 16. I didn't have a good background with like the whole education side of things. I was actually working in WH Smith at the time, part-time there. And yeah, I got lucky enough to pursue a 3-year diploma course at Westminster Kingsway College.
Amazing. And you went straight from catering college into Berkeley with Pierre Kaufman, who taught the likes of Gordon Ramsay and Marcus Waring. And that's an incredible start to your career. How was it for you working with Pierre?
So yeah, there was actually a poster in Westminster College where I was leaving as a third year student. So embarking on like the first industry restaurant, like not knowing what, I didn't even know who Pierre Kaufman was at the time. So obviously I did a bit of research, knew that he had like Le Temps Clair back in the day, like three Michelin star restaurant, very French, but basically everything I learned at college, then French classical techniques, would be a step up moving into working with him, where it was perfecting what I learned at college, starting as a commis chef there. I worked for him for 4 years, and yeah, it was very intense when I first joined. I was very scared. There was 25 chefs in the kitchen. I actually asked to go on pastry for a year at least, just because it was a lot quieter. Then that way, I kind of planned to overlook the rest of the restaurant and the sections and stuff. And yeah, he's an incredible guy. Like, he's very scary. At that time, it was very scary to work for. It was very intense. We knew what he wanted, and we had to maintain that consistency day in, day out. Mm-hmm. Even though it wasn't like a Michelin star restaurant, but it was him, and it felt like it was probably one of the toughest places I worked, especially at like being 19, pretty fresh, not knowing how other people would react from like my normal college friends. It was good. It was very intense, but right now, yeah, I can easily say we're more like family. So it's paid off. Yeah, I got quite lucky, to be fair.
And what kind of influence would you say that he's had on your career? How has it
changed you? Yeah, his influence is, so anything I do now, even in life, like he's working for him matured me as a person. But then going back to like the cooking techniques and methods, like I'll make a sauce exactly how I would make a sauce when I was working for him. I prep fish and prep meat exactly the same way as I would with him. And I teach my chefs that as well, because he's, like, for me, he's like the god of this industry. So for me to have been lucky enough to work for him and know how he would teach me, I can then teach my chefs that sort of philosophy of what I've learned through him. And I think that's what's important the most. So as much as I have like the modern techniques and a few like shortcuts and stuff, nothing does change from what I learned back then to what I do now. It's still the same, and I wouldn't change that at all.
Right. And from there, you went to France for training. How did that experience differ to the one with Pierre?
So working for Pierre Kaufman, so he actually drove me to France at that time, which was amazing. So the connection with me and him grew stronger. It was like I was like his grandson being taken there, where obviously through his connects, I had to represent him as a person. Because obviously I worked for him so long, so I don't want to let like the team down and embarrass him, if anything, if I was to mess up or make any mistakes. So I felt pressure from that, but then also the other pressure I felt was the fact that I didn't know any French language. I didn't speak it at all. I knew a few slang words and stuff throughout my time working for Pierre, and yeah, it was really tough. As soon as I got there, it was like it's hard to explain. So I went there with an ambition to learn and see what all the fuss was about, this whole French gastronomy, learn from what I did, took at college, to then enhancing that with Pierre Kaufman at the Barclay, and then take it even further to actually go to France and see what everything was happening. And it was more so the fact of they thought I was trying to prove a point, but I was there just to learn. So first 3 months really tough. I got spoken to quite nastily. It wasn't very pleasant. And then within time, we had new people come in into that restaurant at the time. So then I wasn't a newbie. And then therefore I ended up being a relationship with the chefs that I was working with, where they weren't actually wanting to learn English. So it helped in my way that I teach them English, they teach me French. We bounce back off each other. So the language picked up pretty quick. I did a year there at in the south of France, Eugène Ilibar, and then I got on really well with the head chef. Then he gave me the connection for Epicure in Paris,
where again, it was very modern there, not as classic as South France, but I think working in Eugenie, it was amazing because we'll wake up so early in the morning, we'll go and pick all the vegetables, and then it'll be on the menu for lunch. Like here in London, I can't do that. And that's something I do miss, but at the same time, it was an experience and it was incredible.
Yeah. And how's your French now?
Yeah, my French now is okay. It's not too bad. I would love to go back to Paris and I'll know enough to get by. But yeah, if you were to put me on the spot, I wouldn't really have to speak too much, but yeah, I do miss it.
And so tell us about New York. You worked in Persei and 11 Madison Park. Did you get much time to enjoy New York or was it just flat out cooking?
Yeah, to be fair, it was flat out cooking. So I did 3 months in each restaurant. It was through a friend who I met, an English guy, who Daniel Calvert. He's actually got a restaurant in Hong Kong now, Belon, which got a Michelin star a year and a half ago. So we were the only two English guys actually in Epicure. We got along really well. We stayed in communication, and he was the connect for Persei because he was sous chef there for 7 years. So a really good guy. And yeah, I did 3 months in each. New York itself, I felt, was very big. But then, to be fair, being in New York for 6 months, I missed London more being in New York than I did when I was in Paris. I'm not sure why. I think maybe just because it was probably closer and a lot smaller. But yeah, I just felt everything in New York was very big. Like looking up at the ceiling and like the tall buildings and stuff. And to be fair, I didn't really get too much time to myself because I was always working. So
right.
Maybe it's just a place I need to revisit and see again.
Yeah. And in terms of work ethic in the kitchens, how does your experience in France and your experience in America, how would you compare them?
I think they're completely different, to be fair. So Persei, 11 Madison Park, 11 Madison Park was more like being in the army. So everyone says like, yes, chef, like at the same time. And there's loads of people. There's like 45, 50 chefs, a lot of stagiaires, with a core of just like 6 sous chefs, which was fine at the time. But yeah, and I prefer the French kitchens. Like I honestly do. Like it's very hands-on. Whereas I feel like the 3 stars in New York were very like big batch production. You're doing 120 covers. It's very repetitive. Like obviously for me at that time, I was very engaged with like speaking to the sous chefs. I got on very well with them. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the guy who was just like peeling grapes for 3 months. So I got quite lucky with that. Whereas working in France, it was very like, if you want to learn, you can go and learn. Like, it's down to you as a person. I feel like, well, I got very lucky with that, where working in France, you have to show me once and then I can do it. Mm-hmm. It was quite rare that you had to show me 2 times to do like fillet and fish or prep something. So obviously everyone's got their own sort of skill of learning, but I got quite lucky with that, I think.
Yeah. And how have you been able to draw out the best of all that amazing experience and bring it into your own kitchen now?
So everywhere I've gone, I've taken techniques and skills that I've learned on that way, on the journey. And like right now, I cook food that I love to eat. And I think that's the most important thing. Like before the whole virus thing happened, we had a fully booked restaurant. And for me, that's an achievement as it is. Like we haven't got hardly any accolades. And to be fair, the restaurant's fully booked. You don't need accolades. So it kind of works hand in hand. Obviously, yeah, the accolades will be more of a celebration for myself, my team, because it just proves that we're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. But when we're walking in on a Tuesday night and we're fully booked and we're leaving on a Sunday evening fully booked, you can't really ask for more. So, I think
it speaks for itself.
And it took 3 years to get to that with Launceston Place, especially. And I think just throughout the whole journey and what the kitchen we're in is downstairs. So we fitted it to the best we can based on what we can produce in a sort of time frame. So whether that's like cooking certain things overnight, but then coming in and it's ready for lunch. And just the whole movement. Because I had a small team. There's only 8 of us in the team. So sometimes it'll take four people's hands to get that one plate complete, mm-hmm. and then it'll go upstairs. So I think just finding the balance of not overcomplicating things, And I've seriously learned that less is more. Like having three components, but perfected, customers can't find fault and critique. Whereas we'll only have good feedback. And that's kind of what I've learned the most, I think.
So describe your food style at Launceston Place.
I'd like to say it's for sure it's tasty, but I'm really focused and driven on the whole like fun dining thing, should we say.
Right.
The restaurant's not as formal as it used to be. Like we have a lot of we have emojis on the menu, so already it brings out the childish side of me. It gives that element of fun. And then yeah, the food does speak for itself. I believe a lot of people eat with their eyes, which is obviously, yeah, we prioritize the flavor first, and then the second in command is the presentation on the plate, and is it accessible for us in the kitchen to actually produce this for Filipe restaurant? And it's finding the balance of not overstretching ourselves, and but then not doing not enough, that we're not pushing boundaries at the same time, which is important. So yeah, fun dining, really tasty. A lot of people say it's art on the plate, but yeah, I guess it's always a good thing. We get a lot of people coming to the restaurant. 9 times out of 10, they got their phone out taking pictures. And they'll post that picture on like social media, and then I'll get tagged, and then eventually they're a follower, and they'll come back to the restaurant again, and they'll message me of when they're going to come, and I'll hopefully change the menu by then. And yeah, that's how it all builds. So yeah, I think it's worked really well, and we've been in a really good place.
And I mean, you mentioned you've created new recipes, and you've been drawing as well. But what is your process when coming up with a new menu from concept to creation?
So I'm actually allergic to shellfish. But I know it's what people want to eat as well sometimes. So that's where the communication between me and the trust between me and my chefs lay. So I can cook a scallop or lobster perfectly, but then if there's certain components of shellfish, like a sauce element, then that's where the trust comes between me and the chefs. So whether it's a bisque we make, but then, okay, they can season it perfectly, but then, or maybe I want to bring up the idea of let's add in a bit of vanilla to it to make it a bit more fruity and a bit more sweet. And it works hand in hand. So my team are just as important as myself when it comes to getting a dish together. So if we were to achieve any accolade or anything, whereas our accolade is the Filipe restaurant, we take credit as a team, and it's not just on me.
Right. And when we get the green light to reopen, how will you manage social distancing in the kitchen?
So I'm quite lucky. So each service, I only need 5 chefs, which is fine. And we have enough, I was actually there last week, and known the difference between like the 1 meter, the 1.5 and 2 meters. There's not much of a change within that. We can still manage. I think we'll tweak the menu a little bit. We might do like a 5-course taste menu and an 8-course taste menu, especially for the evening. Like this, each chef will focus on a dish itself, and it'll be a bit more efficient, I think. And until we eventually go back to normal, then yeah, it'll be full hands-on again. We'll go back to the a la carte and then pushing boundaries even more. But yeah, just to get back on our feet, I think, 5-course and an 8-course taste menu to start.
Right. And do you think the current situation will have a long-term effect on fine dining?
I think not just fine dining. I think the whole industry is a little bit all over the place. Like a lot of it is based on trust and how clean a restaurant is. And I think a lot of it is people's minds at the same time. And everyone has their own view on the virus. I don't think this year, it'll take a look like this. I ruled out 2020 completely. Like for me, if I can start 2021 and go back to how we were, then I would, without a doubt. But I do think it's a wake up call for everyone. I've actually noticed within our industry, especially, like there's chefs that I've never spoken to before who are like reached out and wished if I'm well and stuff, and it's actually brought our industry a lot more closer than it has ever been. Which is amazing. But then yeah, I do look at stuff about, like I've seen on news about washing hands, and except like we should be doing that anyway. Like if I get on the train, as soon as I get off the train, I wash my hands, like it's normal. So hopefully everything will be a lot more cleaner, people will respect each other a lot more and each other's space.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully it will be it won't be a long process to get back to where we were.
So outside of the pandemic, what would you say the biggest challenges are that you've had to face?
I think mental health is probably a big thing. Like, I overthink a lot of things, and like, I was actually in tears when we had to close the restaurant and some of my chefs saw that and I didn't like the fact they saw that. And yeah, it was emotional, because when you push so much and you wake up thinking about work, you go to bed thinking about food and what's on a day-to-day plan, and each day goes by. I was in such a good routine. And then it was a shock to the system where everything was like just paused. So the biggest thing for me was keeping my chefs sane and knowing that this is not going to be forever. So reflecting back on everything that we've gone through, talking about dishes, talking about the fun times, because my team, we're so close. We go out together, we go eating at restaurants together, we go out partying together. It's really like a family, and they've been with me for so long, which is where I'm lucky, because before the virus, I had a waiting list of chefs that wanted to work with me. And that's another thing. Like, I make it clear with my team that they're working with me and not for me, because they're part of everything that we do. Like, I've had most of my team been with me for 2-3 years, and it's so important, like, to have that core where obviously I know I'm doing something right for them wanting to stay with me long, but at the same time having that respect within ourselves that we know that we've got a job to do, and we're going to do that job to cook for people who love what we do. And yeah, that's the most important thing. So I think the hardest thing for me is just reminding myself that, like, we've done well, and we're going to be coming back stronger than we were originally. So
yeah, so it sounds like you're quite an inspiration and a mentor actually to the people that you work with.
Yeah, the thing is, a lot of us are the same age as well, so we have so much respect within us. Like, I've got 1-2 chefs maybe who are a little bit older than me, so the respect within us, like the whole, like, respect to elders, like, we're just good friends anyway. Like, and yeah, we know what's wrong, we know what's right, and that's when it's important. Like, they know what I want to achieve and what direction I want the restaurant to go in, and they've known that for the last 2.5-3 years, and they've stuck with me because they believed in that. And then me giving back to them is the fact that, like, yeah, they work 4 days a week, they have 3 days off, so they still get a life. Like me working 6 days is normal, because, like, it's my name on the line. And obviously if guests want to see me, then I'll be there and stuff. But that's finding the balance, and I'm giving them 3 days. So it's also, for me, it's all about finding the balance. And I think it took a long time to do that, but we really have lost some place.
And what would your advice be to a budding young chef?
So I get asked quite a lot, and I do think that for a young chef entering the industry, you want to find out what you're attracted to the most, whether it's like the fun dining, the brasseries, the gastro pubs, like, and then stick with it. That's the most important thing, sticking with it, because going five, like me now, 12 years in the industry, like, for me to take it, like, a step back now and then go into a brasserie, I'll have to start at the bottom and then work my way up. So this is a long process, and you end up meeting people on the way, you end up finding mentors on the way. Like, if I wanted to, I can just call Kaufman tomorrow and he'll advise me or guide me in a new direction, or just reassure me in some sort of way, where if I'm troubled or I've got something on my mind, then he'll be the one that I can contact. And then, yeah, communicating and having these people that we look up to is the most important thing on your side. So yeah, I think that, and obviously focusing, giving 110% at all times, and not chasing money, because, like, money comes, like, I'm nowhere near where I want to be. So I know I've still got a long way to go, and eventually I can be like the next Zach Baines, or I don't know, so many chefs, good chefs out there, Rene Redzepi, like, who knows what the future has to hold. But like, yeah, for me, I'm just taking everything that comes, so I think they should do the same as well.
So speaking of your own ambitions, where do you see yourself in say 5 or 10 years time?
I would like my own restaurant one day. When that is, I don't know. It could be in a year's time, it could be 2 years' time. I'm literally living, like, because of how scary this virus has been and unexpected, mm-hmm. my mentality going back into work is living every day as it comes. Making yeah. sure when I wake up in the morning, like, this is where I need to be, like, selfish, that, like, I'm happy going to work. I'm happy doing my job. I leave the restaurant, people are happy. And yeah, I think when you wake up and you know you don't want to go to work, that's when you know you're not meant to be there or you're not meant to do that. When yeah, when I get to that stage, then I know it's time to move on, but I'm nowhere near that at the moment. So we'll see every day as it comes.
Okay. So, I mean, kitchens are notorious for being very stressful environments. What do you do to relax and unwind?
Our kitchen wasn't places, isn't that? It's stressful during service, but as soon as service is finished, like music goes back on, we chill, we chat. We have a good vibe between us. On my days off, I normally see family a lot. That's the most important thing. Like, for me, family, I'm very family orientated. I'm very close with my brother, especially my mum and dad. And then, yeah, just catch up with friends as much as I can. They know how important work is to me and how much of a priority I've always put it first. So they'll never, like, question, oh, you're never coming out or you're never meeting up with us. Because if they were going out, I'd always make sure I meet them after work. So I'll miss, like, the dinner, but I'll be there for the drinks. And that's kind of how it works. And yeah, that's my kind of downtime. And obviously catch up and sleep. Like, I've actually learned a lot that I need to step back and let my team crack on, because that whole building trust within them, they can do it. And sometimes me taking a lunch off work, for instance, where I can do my thing or go and see a friend or a family, is important. And I've learned that I need to find the balance in life as well.
Yeah. So, speaking about winding down, I mean, do you ever go to other restaurants and dine out?
Yeah, I do. My favourite in London is the Leverie. Like, really good friends with Brett Graham. I actually did work experience there like 10 years ago when I was at college. It was my third year at college. I did 4 weeks there. And I literally, for 4 weeks, I was just peeling grapes and watching him play out food, which was, for me, at the time, it was amazing. And then I've always had that relationship with him. I've been to EA's restaurant so many times, like over 15, 20 times. So, wow. Yeah, it's a really good restaurant. I'm a big fan of. And also Alex at the Greenhouse. I haven't been there yet, and it's top of my list. But what he's doing with food, it just looks insane.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got many tattoos. Are they sentimental to you, or are they more like pieces of art?
Yeah, they're more pieces of art, to be fair. Like, recently, the addiction grew. But yeah, I had, like, my nan's name, like, tattooed on my arm, and then it kind of just escalated from there. So I opened a restaurant called the Woodford 4.5 years ago now, and next door there was a tattoo shop.
Okay.
So they'll come in for lunch, I'll go with them, and it'll just work like that. That's kind of how it was. But for me, like, the whole tattoo thing, it's like my identity as well. Like, it's who I am. It doesn't change what I cook, or it doesn't change me as a person. Like, some people like it. I probably have more haters than anything else. So, like, you can't win and please everyone. So, yeah, it's yeah. kind of the way it is.
But it's not for anyone else. It's for you. So
exactly. Like, I don't care. So yeah, it's yeah, so, my body under there.
Yeah. So tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
I love animals. I don't know. Like, so if I was to have a day off, I would love to go to, like, the zoo and take my nephews. That's, like, one of the best things I would love to do. I'm a big fan of, like, going on car journeys as well, and, like, sightseeing. So typical, a lot of people say, like, I look like I've just come out of prison, or like I'm very street and stuff because of all the tattoos. But to be fair, I like to think I'm the complete opposite. But yeah, I'm actually just a normal guy. But yeah, I have a love for food. So
and a very amazing special talent for food as well.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I have got a bit lucky on the way. Like, but at the same time, yeah. I do know I've had to graft as well, and for anyone that will be watching, and yeah, you do, like, you get out what you put in, and that's something I'm a firm believer in. So
yeah, well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today, Ben. Thank you so much for your time. And guys, if you want to follow Ben on Instagram, he's at Ben Murphy. Is it Ben Murphy or is there any underscore in there, Ben?
Ben Murphy Chef, yeah.
Ben Murphy Chef. And I'm at Poshnosh Girl. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.